Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, and earned a law degree from Florida State University. He served as legal counsel for Mother Teresa for 12 years. And from 2002 to 2006, he served President George W. Bush as the director of the White House's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives. From 2011 to 2020, he was the second president and CEO of Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida. His name, Jim Tuohy. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to a man who's led an unbelievable life, Jim Tuohy. Jim, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks for having me on, Jack.
We actually had you on about 12 years ago, so it's welcome back. Welcome back. Can we start by you offering an opening prayer this evening?
Happy to. Lord Jesus, on this feast of St. James, we pray in gratitude for our calling to follow you, to deny ourselves, to pick up our cross and follow you and realize that your burden is light and that you make it light because of the comforts of your divine heart and the compassion and mercy that you shower upon our lives. And we turn to the Blessed Mother, who heard those words at the Annunciation, great will be his dignity. And we thank you for this conferral of greatness in our human dignity that reminds us that we are a little less than the angels, that we are your children. So we ask you to bless this conversation, all the listeners, all those touched by this wonderful program in Jack's ministry, and continue to remind us of the Virgin Mary's prayers and intercession and your companionship through your Sacred Heart.
Amen.
Amen.
Jim, can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Well, I was actually born in Indiana. I was born in Terre Haute, Indiana, but my parents and my family, my other siblings, and I lived in Paris, Illinois. So we were across the border, and there was no hospital in Paris, Illinois. It's a little farming community where my dad's business was, UO Colson. So we were born in Terre Haute and baptized in Paris, and we moved within a year to Jacksonville. And so that's how I grew up, my mom and dad and the five of us, my twin sister and I, and then three older siblings. So, yeah, we had I was only in Indiana living there for, or Paris, Illinois, living there for 10 months of my life and then moved.
What's the biggest thing you learned from dad, and what's the biggest thing you learned from mom?
My dad had a great work ethic, and so he very much taught us the lessons about, you know, no free lunch in life, and that you had to work hard, and he had an expression, get the job done right. And he would try to really emphasize that in our upbringing. And my mom actually raised us because my parents divorced when I was young. And so she had an enormous influence on me because I grew up with her, all five of us did. And she was extraordinary. She had a tremendous Marian devotion. And so I would go with her every Monday night to Monday night novenas of the Miraculous Medal. And so I pray that prayer every day, that consecration prayer to the Miraculous Medal, where we dedicate and consecrate ourselves to her under that title. So she had a great influence on me. And both of them had a great sense of humor, so that helped me a lot. You know, I like to laugh, and so we had a lot of laughter in the household.
You also loved to play basketball. How have you carried that through your life? What has it taught you throughout your life?
No, I truly love the sport because it's a team sport. That's why you'll see a lot of teams with great talent that don't win a lot of games because there's no chemistry on the team. And similarly in life, if you know, I remember the expression, if you want to think of yourself as a saint, live alone. And it was the recognition that it was through community and through our interdependence that we would discover our calling to spiritual growth and maturity and to relationship with Christ. And of course, the Trinity is community. And so with basketball, you have community. You've got the five working together as one, so it's even more than Trinitarian. But you have great lessons about sacrifice, and it's not about you. It's about the team and about, you know, encouraging teammates and about putting mistakes behind you, taking good shots. It's about defense and rebounding. It's not the glamour stuff. It's the nitty-gritty day-to-day. So you learn a lot of life lessons. That's why we, at Ave Maria University, we were really proud of our basketball teams, but we also saw them as places that young men and women would grow and mature and realize that life's much bigger than basketball, and also that they can learn a lot from basketball. So yeah, I'm a basketball junkie. I was just out 2 days ago drilling my daughter who's shooting. She's going to be a senior in high school and she's practicing her shots. So we're out there working on the mechanics. And yeah, I was 7 years in a gym every day at college and law school, Jack. So it's in my blood.
You were Bob Cousy in your day, you know that, Jim? So, all right. Early on in your career.
You're absolutely right. Bob Cousy was one of my heroes. I loved him. Ernie DiGregorio, those point guards, they were tremendous.
Early in your career, you met a man, Senator Mark Hatfield, who was a senator for 30 years from Oregon, and you worked for him. What did he teach you, Jim?
You know, he was an extraordinary man. I talked to his wife just the other day because of it was the senator's birthday. He had passed away in 2010. Strangely enough, this Southern Baptist really taught me about the Word of God. He was a real evangelical Christian and very much a lover of the Word, and gave me my first Bible study book, the Barclay series on the Gospels. And so I grew up in Catholic schools, and you know how us Catholics often are strangers to the Bible. We will hear it at church and that's about it. But the idea of studying it and really diving deeper into it was foreign to me. And so the senator and Lawton Childs both, you know, had a tremendous deep conviction and love of Jesus Christ. And so that really was, that impacted me and showed me that you could live your faith in the public square. Because Mark Hatfield and Lawton Childs sure did. And so I was very much impressed by both of them in that regard.
35 years ago, almost to the day, August 20th, 1985, Jim met somebody that changed his life, changed the world, that person. When we come back, we're going to find out who it was. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with Jim Tuohy, who for 10 years was the second president and CEO of Ave Maria University in Naples, Florida. Jim, August 20th, 1985, you meet a 75-year-old, 4-foot-10-inch lady. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that was a turning point in my life. I didn't realize it at the time. But I met Mother Teresa there in Calcutta. I was overseas on a trip for Senator Hatfield. And on my way back, I wanted to meet someone that was living the gospel. And I knew she was. And the senator knew her. So I felt, well, I had entree to meet her. I learned subsequently that she saw anybody that came to Calcutta that was from the West. Because if they came all that way, she felt she should. But I thought I needed entree. He provided it. And I met her on that morning. And it was a very brief conversation, and she asked me to go to her home for the dying, which I did, and she also asked me to go see her sisters in Washington when I got back. I didn't even know she had nuns in Washington, so I went and did that too, and obviously those were transformative events because I not only, you know, had the opportunity to be introduced to her care at the Home for the Dying, but then to become engaged with the Missionaries of Charity, these wonderful men and women that she, order that she founded, that are still out there in the world just doing incredible things. So yeah, that was a tremendous grace, and I didn't deserve it. So it was a real experience of mercy. And so I'm very grateful for that.
When you walked into that House of the Dying in Calcutta, what did you see?
Well, I just saw a sharp contrast to everything outside the building. Outside the building was noise, chaos, filth, misery, broken relationships. Nobody cared about anybody. We're stepping over bodies. You know, it was a sharp contrast inside the Gift of Peace, inside Kaligat, I'm sorry. It was clean. The sisters knew the patients by name. They were being kept comfortable. There was peace. It was striking to see. And, you know, and the sisters only had 50 men on one side of the building and 50 women on the other side. So it was only making a tiny dent in the demand for such care, because Calcutta in 1985 was just so incredibly impoverished, and it was also aligned with the Soviet Union. And so they had, West Bengal had this communist government, and so they weren't doing anything in the way of foreign investment or anything in free enterprise. And as a result, no jobs, no growth, no nothing. And so, yeah, it was, the contrast couldn't have been more dramatic. And most of all, there were these cheerful nuns. You'd think if anyone had a right to be discouraged and down, it would be sisters that are around dying people all day. But in fact, they were cheerful, they were joyful. So they had the fire of love in their hearts that really impelled them in their work.
We're talking to Jim Tuohy. From 1985 to 1996, he served as the legal counsel for Mother Teresa and her flock. How did you ever become the lawyer for Mother Teresa? And did you ever tell her she couldn't do something?
Great questions, Jack. Well, I think the first question was, I was in the right place at the right time. And that she was needing legal help, and she was doing a lot of different things that the sisters couldn't do. I met her in 85, and then I went and met her sisters. And so then I was volunteering in their soup kitchen. But, then I realized, well, here this house doesn't have tax exempt status, and they're paying real estate taxes. So I started doing that. And then she was opening an AIDS home in Washington, and the neighbors didn't want an AIDS home there. And so the government was blocking it. And so I worked on that. And then Mother one time called me up and said, come over to the house, because she was in the U.S. And I came over, and she handed me her passport, and she said, go get me these five visas, you know. And one of them was to Cuba, which takes forever, and one was to Haiti, which is a dysfunctional embassy. So I was thinking, well, this is going to be hard. Do you have an application? No. Do you have the photos? No. When do you need the visas? By tomorrow. Okay. So, yeah, it was quite the experience to watch. It goes to the title of your show, of how there's nothing impossible with God, and that there's you've got to believe in the possible. And she really was living embodiment of believing in the possible, and taking the situation she had in front of her and do something about it. And so I was always very impressed with that. So I that's how I started doing the work, and then it just started to grow and grow, because we had to protect. President Bush liked to joke and say, what kind of world do we live in when even Mother Teresa had a lawyer? So he thought that was an argument for tort reform. But she did need legal help, and she did have to protect the use of her name, and her nuns needed immigration assistance. So that was a great thing. And yes, to your second question, yeah, there were times where you had to say to Mother, I think this is a mistake. And especially as she aged, you know, Mother was human, and she, you know, she was an extraordinary decision maker at age 75. But as she got older and into her 80s, she was forgetful, and she was eager to say yes to people. You know, she wanted to make people happy, and that could get her into some signing documents that were ill-advised and such. So I'm actually writing a book about that now, Jack, about some of my experiences as her lawyer. And I wanted to do this, but never had the time. And now that I've got some time, it's wonderful to reminisce and think of these old days with Mother.
Raymond Arroyo has this weekly show, The World Over, on EWTN, you know, and he talked about Mother Angelica, the founder of EWTN. And once he said, I quote, "She is a bulldozer in a marshmallow forest." Mother Teresa was a bulldozer in a marshmallow.
She was a force of nature for sure, Jack. When she put her mind to something, she went at it. And she was impatient. She could get angry, but it was never the way that, you know, all of us can get angry. You know, she would, if she got angry, she would apologize. She would, you know, she was with her intimates, you know, her sisters. And if you work with her long enough, she was all business, you know, whereas when she'd meet people, it wasn't a hypocrisy or insincerity. It's just, that's the reality of it. That's everybody in a marriage and in a family knows how that dynamic works. So Mother was all business. So I realized at some point that I had grown in her confidence and such when she just, you know, she cut to the chase when I'd see her, and we weren't small talking anymore. So that was good.
A couple of quotes from her. "I'm a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who was sending a love letter to the world." Another one, "Jesus, what disguise will you be in today? Joy is the net that catches souls. And Heavenly Father, use me today without consulting me." Talk about that one, Jim.
Yeah, she said that to me many times, that should be my prayer. And she would say, give God a free hand. A lot of times if we want to know the whole plan, we won't give God a free hand because we'll tell, it's my will be done, not thy will be done, you know. And so she recognized that sometimes it was better to be used without even knowing what the game plan was. And I think she experienced that in her own life, that she just followed what was in front of her and opening the home for the dying and then going out of India and then going into the U.S. And she kind of just followed opportunities and felt God was at work in the circumstances of her daily life. And she often was sort of the last to know, you know, even with someone like Princess Diana, you know, Mother saw her and saw that she was a beautiful woman and a broken woman. And so Mother loved her with a mother's love, but didn't really fully realize, I think, the impact that she had on her or on me or on a lot of people that she touched over the years, her nuns, her priests, you know, Sandy McMurtry, Jan Petrie, some of the ones really close to Mother, Michael Colopy. A lot of us stay in touch with each other that were, you know, regulars in Mother's life, and all of us, all of our lives were dramatically altered.
I remember Lady Di, you know, this unbelievable, beautiful, all the money, all the dresses, clothes, everything. Contrast it with Mother Teresa. They were probably the two most famous women on earth in the 90s, and they died within a week of each other. So we're talking to Jim Tuohy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about September 4th, 2016. And I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasool. We're with Jim Tuohy. If you want to learn more, www.agingwithdignity.org. Jim, the Pope canonized Mother Teresa on September 4th, 2016. Where were you? And describe that day.
Yeah, another unforgettable moment. I should actually back up that months earlier, I get this call from Calcutta, and the sisters asked me to do the first reading at the canonization mass, which just floored me. And I realized I wasn't worthy to do it, but if they asked me, what a tremendous gift and honor. And so where I was standing there at that podium that they had below the altar out there on a gorgeous, hot, sunny day, with all of St. Peter's packed as far as you could see, doing that first reading at the Mass, and then hearing the Holy Father pronounce those great, memorable words, and then realizing that Mother had joined the communion of saints. And so then you started looking around, and over there was where St. Peter was crucified upside down, and further up the road, St. Paul was killed, martyred, that you realize the company that she had been in, that she was in now, and then we realized the company we had been in living with and working with someone so extraordinary as Mother, to travel with her and to see her compassion, her love, her joy, her love of God in action. It was tremendous, and it's aligned a lot with Pope Francis when he did his first encyclical on the joy of the gospel. You know, Mother believed that it was a joy, like you said, that quote, joy was the net by which we catch souls. And so that day was a tremendous day for the church. And I think her influence will be even greater in the years ahead than it was in her lifetime.
All right. You know, you work for Senator Mott Harfield, then you're the lawyer for Mother Teresa for a dozen years, 2002 to 2006. You're the director of the White House's Office of Faith-Based Community Initiatives for President George W. Bush. How did you ever get that gig?
I know. What kind of luck there is to work for two living saints. No, I'm kidding. I used to joke with President Bush about that. I'm working for another living saint. But that was a real grace and out of nowhere. I was being used without being consulted because Mary and I had moved up to Washington to care with Mary's mom to help her care for Pop, who had dementia. And so we moved up right at the time George Bush moved up and took office. We were not involved in the campaign at all, but we were close friends with Jeb and Kalumba Bush, still are. They're just tremendous people. And so I was working with Aging with Dignity and helping with Pop. And then a series of circumstances developed where the faith-based director that initially opened the office for President Bush suddenly resigned in his ninth month. And they had this vacancy. Then September 11th happened, which was catastrophic for the world, obviously, and the loss of lives and the changes to our way of life with all the security measures that have followed. So, but then a few months after the dust had settled and the White House has gone back to a broader range of topics, then they hired me. And so, yeah, I worked through the rest of the first term and a year and a half into the second term. And it was a real privilege to work for President Bush. Just he and Laura are just tremendous people. I stay in touch with them and love them. And also to meet all these faith-based leaders all over the country. And it was just a great experience.
What's the biggest thing you learned from George W.?
Well, from him personally, I loved the fact that he was the same in front of the curtain as he was behind it, that he didn't live a double life where you try to appear better than you are. You know, he was himself. He was comfortable in his own skin. And I remember going into the Oval Office one morning early before senior staff, and there he was at the desk alone reading Oswald Chambers' book, My Utmost for His Highest. And he had this daily Bible devotional, and every other year he would do the Bible in a year study. So he really recognized that leaders are led and that he needed that spiritual refreshment. And then I also learned through the work, you know, these armies of compassion that were out there, that when you try to talk about homelessness and drug addiction and such, if you don't address the spiritual poverty, government's just throwing Band-Aids at it. It's not going to address why the person's sticking a needle in their arm, why the woman's choosing a bad boyfriend over her kids. If you don't get to the spiritual roots of this, you're never going to help turn lives around. And so President Bush was pointing that out and saying government can't love, but these faith-based groups can, and they can develop relationship. Let's unleash them. Let's unleash these armies of compassion and judge them by their results. Are addicts recovering? Are these people finding jobs and so forth. So he had great confidence in America and America's faith communities.
All right. In February of 2011, you meet another living saint. Some call him a living saint. Some call him a maniac. All right. But he is one passionate guy. Tom Monahan, the Pizza King.
Yep.
Tell us about Tom Monahan.
Well, I had met him at one White House briefing when I was asked to go brief a number of Catholic business leaders. And he was there. I think I had a couple of those kind of briefings over the years. But I was introduced to Tom through Jack Donahue, because Jack, a great man, 13. Do you remember Jack?
Yes.
Yeah, 13 kids, 84 grandkids. His beloved wife, Redora, is still with us and great woman. And I'd worked at St. Vincent College where Chris Donahue was my board chairman. And so when the Ave Maria was looking for a president, Jack talked to Tom about me. So I didn't know Tom. He didn't know me. And then I knew Michael Timmis Sr. a little bit from the faith-based days and the prayer breakfast group there in Washington. And so the combination was that I was in Naples for at a dinner at Jack's home with Chuck Colson there and the Timmises and Tom. And at that dinner, they recruited me to be open to being president. But we had just moved to the Washington area. I just opened up a nice business, a consulting business, and Mary's was close to her mom. And, you know, we just bought a house. And so I said to Mary, you know, maybe the Lord's at work here, but I'm not going to take this job at your expense. And so Mary privately went down, met with Tom, met with Michael Timmis and others. And then she called up. I'll never forget her call. She was almost crying, but she just said, I'm not happy with this, but I think God's calling us to this work. I'll never forget that tremendous woman, my wife, and all these different jobs and journeys. And we've been married 28 years, and now here we were. Jack, we were still in boxes. We had only moved into the house 6 months earlier. We hadn't even gotten out of the boxes. Five kids, you know, the oldest and a senior in high school. And here we were getting ready to up and move again. And thank God we did. What a great experience Ave Maria University was.
Tom Monahan started this Ave Maria University in the middle of nowhere, east of Naples. Tell us about Ave Maria University. You were the second president and CEO from 2011 to 2020.
Yeah, just a tremendous small Catholic liberal arts college where you can be devout and normal and work, function in the world. It's not a bubble. I was very proud of how we expanded majors. I think there were 11 when I got there, and there were 30-something when I left. We increased enrollment, almost doubled it, raised a lot of money, built a new building that has the Mother Teresa Museum in it, the only one in the U.S., have the Mother Teresa Project sending students to Uganda and Calcutta and missions of Mother Teresa all over the world. So really, it's a place where your faith is practiced. It welcomes people of other faiths. I was very proud of that. We had a tremendous faculty and staff that were really devout in their faith. I mean, most of the staff was Catholic. And I think that was helpful, but it wasn't, you know, you don't want to be surrounded by people that are all identical to you. Otherwise it becomes a bubble. So we had wonderful diversity. So about a quarter of our students were minority students and about 20% were not Catholics. And so that was great because that was mission field for us. So yeah, I loved the students there. I loved my time there, great people there. And I pray for the school every day. I wish them well. And 9 years of me was enough, Jack. By that time, it was ready for a change.
We're talking to Jim Tuohy. When we come back, we're going to ask him about Gen Zers. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Jim Tuohy. From 2011 to 2020, was second president and CEO of Ave Maria University, Naples, Florida. Jim, so you were surrounded by Gen Zers. Tell us about them, and what do they truly want and need today?
Well, I think that they want to live lives of purpose, and they've watched parents and grandparents often trapped in material world concerns. They want to go and make a difference, make a mark for themselves. They've got big hearts. They have a hunger for God. They've been turned off a lot by scandals within the church and elsewhere. They, of course, have tremendous detectors for hypocrisy. All young people do, but I think Gen Z ones have refined ones. And so they're looking for things that are authentic and real and that they can give their lives to, their hearts to. And so there, in a high-tech world that attacks relationship and personal connections, they're trying to find ways to make those connections. And so on college campuses, you see students really craving for friendship and relationship that affirms their human dignity, which is, you know, and then you look at the other end of life with the elderly and you realize they too are craving the same thing, that they have a hunger for God and that they know they're going home to God and that they're craving connection. So it's beautiful to have worked on both ends of that spectrum.
Some facts about death. In America, every minute, 5.4 people die. 325 an hour, 7,800 a day. 250,000 people die every day in the world. And in 1996, Jim, you started Aging with Dignity, and you came up with a little pamphlet. I think over 35 million copies have been sent out. Tell us about Aging with Dignity, please.
Yeah, Aging with Dignity is there to promote and safeguard the right to age with dignity. I mean, that's your right. That's our mission at Aging with Dignity. We've got a great staff in Florida. I started that out of my wallet, and you know, then I was fortunate to get a grant or two, and then the first employees brought their own chairs to work, and we got donated furniture. So it really was an act of faith by a lot of people coming together, because I worry about euthanasia. And because it's always easier to kill someone than to care for them. And so what we have to do is promote a way that's not pain, that's not poison, that allows people to exercise their federal right of self-determination, and that keeps the topic and the discussion on how can we maintain human dignity during times of serious illness. And so I developed Five Wishes. This is the document. Yeah, and 38 million copies of it are out in you know, big hospital chains to little churches distributing them. And because it helps people not only protect their legal rights, but also helps them protect their dignity, their comfort, how they want to be remembered, what they want their loved ones to know. So because dying isn't just a medical moment, Jack, the stats you cite are true. And so death is a reality. And of course, the baby boom avoids any thought about it because baby boomers think they're going to live forever. So you got Mick Jagger out there doing concerts, you know, and he's still gyrating. He's probably got fake hips now, but you know, the culture's changed. And so, yeah, Five Wishes is helping families plan for and discuss end-of-life care. And then during the coronavirus times, we're trying to be an advocate for the elderly, poor, the disabled, the mentally ill who can be isolated and shunned. For them, social distancing has been a way of life. And so now we can't abandon them and isolate them like they're on death row. So we're, Aging with Dignity is doing a lot of advocacy right now, and I'm proud to be part of that.
If you want to learn more, Five Wishes, spell out fivewishes.org. Jim, if there's a listener tonight that says, Jim, I'm old. My body's breaking down. I'm useless. I just want to go. What do you say to that person?
Well, I would say to them to just remind and affirm them of their tremendous dignity, that they're made in the image and likeness of God, and that their life is precious. And it's no less precious just because they're old or they have Parkinson's or they're struggling with a spouse that has Alzheimer's. You know, we're no, that utilitarian view of man, Pope Benedict, Pope John Paul II, now Pope Francis, have all attacked this idea that you're measured by your usefulness. That's a very dangerous metric, and that's gotten the world in trouble century after century. And so, you know, I would affirm them in their right to age with dignity. That's why I'm writing this book on Mother Teresa, because she aged so fearlessly, and she knew that she had come from God and was going home to God. And so she was aware of death, and she prepared for it, and she prepared those around her for it, which is why Five Wishes is helpful. And then there was a trust that God numbered her days and God was with her. And you also have to educate people, you know, because sometimes medicine doesn't know when to stop. And the church doesn't, and other faith communities don't require morally, their teachings don't say you've got to take every medical intervention known to man. You know, sometimes in the face of illness, you let go and you let God and you go home to God. And so it's mostly important to me that people are accompanied on this journey and are loved, because that's the great need. Mother Teresa said the worst disease she ever saw, Jack, was loneliness. And that's a real disease in our country, even in rich countries like America.
Yes, one time I remember she gave a speech in America, and she said, America has a plague. It's rampant. The plague is called loneliness. Talk to us about loneliness.
Well, Mother taught us that the fundamental need of a person, even if they're in stage four cancer, the fundamental need they have is to love and to be loved. And when that need isn't met, people are alienated and they're hurting from within because they're not fully able to express their humanity. So, and when you can't do that, then you have that darkness and you have that division and distance from others, and then you feel isolated and alone. And that's not how we were created. The Trinity, it reminds us of that communion of persons that we have to live. And so, yeah, I feel like new initiatives to combat loneliness, to love one another, to get young people in the lives of the elderly. We need the elderly. We need their wisdom. And so, yeah, I love that Aging with Dignity's got a membership now where we're out there advocating for the elderly poor, the disabled, the mentally ill, and the ones that whose lives are every bit as precious as Bill Gates and others that you've cited. You know, in God's eyes, we're all the same and we're his children. And so we have to live like that.
We're in unprecedented times. The COVID, the animosity, the hatred between the two sides. If Mother Teresa was still with us today, Jim, what would she tell us about these unprecedented times?
You know, on her tombstone in Calcutta, the Bible verse that was chosen for her headstone was from John 15:12, love one another as I have loved you. I think that would be the first words out of her mouth, because and she used to say too that when you're judging people, you have no time to love them. And we see so much of the, you know, the cancel culture and so much where people are just judging others and rushing to finger point and accuse and blame and all that division, the partisan divide, even in the midst of this pandemic and then all the terrible aftermath of these lockdowns and what it's doing to the poor. These economic lockdowns are just so destructive of the poor all over the world. And we're going to start seeing the consequences when we stop spending trillions of dollars to prop up the economy. And so in the midst of this, I think the mother would remind us to love one another and that people are more important than things and that we have to invest in people and their needs right now.
Jim Tuohy, it's been an honor to have you back. I admire you. Your life has been amazing, and God still has great, great plans for you. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, Jack. I admire you and what you're doing, and it's a privilege to be on your show.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.